So, thank you for staying, and I personally feel really that having seen this film, that we're really, really looking at a huge international problem that also loops back to Canada and the fact that Indigenous rights here are equally ignored, and the duty to consent and free informed prior consent is just not honored. Duty to consult and free informed prior consent is not honored here either. But as I said, we really like to hear from you. And I'm just going to briefly introduce who we have up on the stage, and so that then your questions can either be directed specifically to one of the panel, or the panel will decide who they would like to answer the question as it comes in. So we've got Mark Wilson here on my immediate right, and he's a PhD candidate in political science and works with the Automatic UBIC and Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group, ICERG, on issues of institutional accountability. So thanks for being here, Mark. Then we have Tessa Munro, who's a registered nurse, and she has very recently visited this community that was shown in the film, Sangaliktukam, and has met with community members who were in resistance to the Marilyn mine. So is there any questions specifically to the community and how they're doing in recent times? Then that would be for Tessa specifically, that would be great. And we also have with us Charlene Patterson, who's a member of the Mining Justice Action Committee, as well as being very involved in QP, and recently went on a delegation to Oaxaca, where she visited with mining impacted communities as well. And just to, if we wanted to take a broader context of this being a transnational problem, international problem beyond Guatemala, then I think Charlene is able to answer those kinds of questions. My name is Heather Tufts, and I'm with the Mining Justice Action Committee. So having said that, we'd like to see, is there anybody who would like to make a comment? Stan, I think, over there. We'll go right to you, and then we'll take it from there.
Thank you very much, and thank you for putting this presentation on. It's very timely. But as I was watching it, I thought about, you know, Guatemala, mountaintop removal of the southern part of West Virginia, the native groups and Fort Ship. They all have a recurring central theme that nobody has any control over their governments. And it was interesting because last night on Jon Stewart, he interviewed Robert Reich. I don't know if you know him, but he's an economist from the United States. And although there are a lot of different things that need to be done, one solution might be to make sure that we our elections are controlled and we have publicly funded elections rather than, you know, the corporate, the billions of dollars spent by corporations. And it's happening in Canada as well. But to have publicly funded elections, what is your comment on that or your response?
Let me massage that one a little bit and then pass it along. And just taking a little more locally, I mean, one issue here was accountability within the university and then in terms of where funds are going and the kind of funds we're accepting. So one issue we ran into just last February was that UVic accepted $500,000 from Goldcorp and released a really interesting press statement that, I won't read it out here, but it said a lot of things about corporate responsibility, sustainability, and commitments to these things among Goldcorp and UVic. And this is something that a few students had a response to, which is like, well, what's involved for the university? What's the function of the university when you accept this kind of money? And there's a clear word for that, which is charity washing. University needs money, and Goldcorp clearly needs a good image. And this is something that the university's been providing in a really particular kind of way. And I think it hasn't been taken particularly seriously here at UVic, mainly because of the amount. You know, $500,000 isn't particularly seen as a grievous amount of cash that does a certain amount of things here, or like that leads us to do certain things. But as a researcher here, a concern I have has to do with, you know, the critical function of the university, which is, are we going to simply go along and say, hey, yeah, this is what sustainability looks like. We saw the film. Is this what corporate responsibility looks like? Is this what a commitment to indigenous solidarity looks like? And what ought the university be doing? So I think as folks who have you know, sway and responsibility here and want a little bit of accountability on the part of our administration, is how do we get that and what does that look like? We don't vote here, but certainly we have a stake, and what ought that to look like? So that's sort of us. I'm going to throw it there and then pass along to you folks for sure.
I mean, I have also been involved in creating some awareness about the donation from Goldcorp to UBIC, and I think it's very questionable because when you look at the strategic plan of the University of Victoria, they do talk about enhancing relationships with Indigenous people, and I just really question whether you can ethically do that knowing the allegations against the human rights of Indigenous people abroad. Something else I would add is just that I think in some ways we do have more control over corporations and government than we think, and I would just like to raise two examples from past history. I know in Norway, like you saw in the video, our Canadian pension plan and private investment plans are invested in Goldcorp, and I would say that's probably something most of us here don't want to support. And in Norway, the people of Norway and the financial advisors to the pension plan actually withdrew on ethical considerations for mining corporations. There, it wasn't Goldcorp, but it was another mining company. And so I think that's an example of civil society coming together and saying, no, like we're not going to support this and standing up for that. And another example is with cluster munitions and landmines. I mean, it's a different issue, but again, that was an issue where civil society came together and stood up, and people from different groups, church groups, universities, academics, politicians, all came together with this common vision and said no. And a treaty to ban landmines came from that. So I think in some ways we do have more power than I just think we do have more power.
Well, I think what we'll try and do, because we're going to eat up a lot of time, is take one question, maybe take one panelist to answer it. So maybe, Charlene, if the question's appropriate, you could take the next one. And we'll try and keep the question short and the answer short because we have so little time. Thank you.
My name is Michelle, and I feel an overwhelming sadness sitting here watching this movie and a sense of helplessness. We have the same problems here in Canada, and we have the same problems here in British Columbia. My personal property where I live is across from residential land that is now being strip mined for gravel. And there's nothing that my local municipality can do about it because it's a provincial aspect. It's now mining. It's out of our hands. It's out of the hands of the local people. It's the provincial government. So when we're talking about doing something politically, you know what you need to do, folks.
Thank you. We'll go to the next question. Thank you very much for that comment.
Hi, guys. My name is Laura, and I'm a fourth-year student here at UBIC. I'm going to just clarify my question here by saying that I'm involved in the mineral exploration industry. And I come to this showing because I'm always on the lookout for more information about the situation in the areas in which I work. So I'd like to direct my question at Charmaine. I would like to say that to take it closer to home in Canada, what are the biggest changes that you would look for in accountability with exploration and mining companies? And do you have any specifics?
I think Heather and I will both comment on this. In my recent visit to Mexico, one of the things that came up over and over again in each community was, again, there was no consultation happening, that the federal government was issuing concessions all over the place throughout Mexico. There were numerous groups that we met with, and none of the local communities were really involved in those decisions. The unions here are trying to get involved on some level, and recently one of the communities we were involved with in Mexico, basically it was ruled that the Canadian mining company had to kind of pack up and leave because of the environmental and human rights abuses there. But also the pension funds that we invest in, like I said, the Canada pension funds, our own personal investment funds, that's really an area that people can get very active in. And I'm a member of CUPE, which is the largest public sector union. And the delegation I went on was with CUPE and with the steel miners, steel workers. And they're the largest private pension or union in the country. So even between those two unions, there's an incredible amount of power and things that can be done. Holding our own government accountable, because what's happening is a lot of our government business is being driven by the corporations. So we met with the embassy officials in Mexico City. A big part of their role now is sort of making way for the business to come and be able to set up. Our organization like CETA is now, the projects they're involved in need to be tied with the business community, or like, so they're being tied a lot with mining resources. So those are areas we just need to, we need to start holding our own government accountable and doing that through the courts here and elsewhere. Heather?
I think we'll just go straight to the next question if there's one. Is there a question? There's, yeah. Stan will find you.
I think there are a couple things that we can do here. First of all, I've forgotten the name of the senator who was there, as a nurse who went into the community.
Tessa.
I think that we should do something for the community, for those women who were so brave, who stood up. That was incredibly moving, because they have nothing, and their own community is fighting them and attacking them. And so there must be some way that we could do something to help them. And if it's money, then we could gather some money, even in this room, that could be sent. But it's probably much more than that. And I think in looking at Canada, we just got rid of most of our environmental laws. And that was really for big oil, but it's for big mining. And we're looking at terrible mining operations all over, apart from the tar sands. So we are no example to the world, and holding our own governments accountable is really up to all of us right now, and holding these companies abroad responsible. I did talk to a broker today about Goldcorp, and he said, well, what other mining company is better? So I think that we have to realize that in Canada we have something like 87% of the mining companies in the world are coming out of Canada, because they think this is a nice, safe place to go, and because we don't have adequate regulations here. So there's a lot of cleaning up our own house. But first, let's help those women and the people in that community and move on from there.
And I would like to just mention at that point, maybe give a bit of a plug, that Graham Russell, who was in this film, who's in the communities all the time, will actually be in Victoria with us on October the 30th with another film for David Sora, the filmmaker, and Graham Russell will be here. So if you want to stay in touch with Mining Justice Action Committee to find out what we're doing, please, when you leave, sign up on our action sheet, and we'll notify you about that film and Graham Russell. It's going to be here at University of Victoria in the David Strong Building, and Graham, who you saw, is very well informed and has lots of ideas and lots of connections to those communities. And so we hope, and that was Vicky Husband, we hope to see you all come out to that event as well. But let's go to the next question.
Thank you. My name is Renee Nikoloff, and I just wanted to inform that there is a standoff currently up in the Sacred Headwaters in the Tahltan area, where they want to, Fortune Minerals wants to mine the Copan Mountain and turn it into a huge coal pit. And that's the area where the province had originally promised the Tahltan that they would protect that area from coal bed methane. And so Shell had left the area, and now Fortune Minerals is up there trying to mine coal. The province, who promised the Tahltan that they would protect the area, has given them all sorts of mining leases. So I think we do have to really hold the government to account. And also, there is going to be a tsunami of federal ministers coming to the north for the Enbridge to consult, to meet with First Nations who have said no, no, no And it's just, I think we really need to do something with our provincial and federal governments. It's just, it's ongoing, and it's just going to be horrendous what they're turning the north into, which is a country very dear to my heart because I lived up there in that area. And the sacred headwaters are just, you know, it really needs to have a focus. And the tall can argument against mining, it just said one mine at a time, we want it done responsibly, if that's possible. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And while you're finding the next person to ask a question, I'd just like to respond. Thank you so much for bringing that to British Columbia. And just that really emphasizes the fact that the duty to consult provisions are really flawed and really easy to use in terms of going into communities and divide and conquer. And that's something that we have to look at. You know, what's the language around free and informed prior consent? Unfortunately, it's really weak. And they can play these games about consultation as they're going to do around the Enbridge, and we'll see what happens. But fortunately, we have some First Nations leaders that are a lot smarter than they are, and I think they're going to be on to that. Next question.
Hi, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the nurse's name, but I would love to hear about your experiences in the village and a little bit about the health consequences that you may have seen as a council.
Well, my experience in a nutshell, I think what a lot of people were experiencing were skin infections, like you saw in the video. There were definitely stories of people who, you know, had been swimming in the river for years and now were coming out with sores all over their body, or children with those little lesions on their body. They've talked a lot about mostly the skin issues, definitely some concern around water contamination and the food and the water that they're breathing, or the water they're drinking, the air they're breathing. And some of those consequences in terms of health outcomes, you're not going to be able to see right away, right? But there's definitely the concern around your environment and how the polluted environment impacts your health. On a broader scale, I think the social dysfunction hugely impacts health, and as you saw, what it's done is completely divided the community into two sides. There's those that do want the mine in some respects because, you know, a lot of these people live in poverty, they don't have a lot of opportunities, so they see, at least in the short term, that this is an opportunity for them to make some money and support their family, like that man was saying, like, I'm not supporting the mine, but I'm supporting my life. And I think that's very real. But then there's the people on the other side who are envisioning the longer term consequences of this, and there's been a huge amount of violence and social dysfunction around that, unfortunately, and I think that speaks to health.
I just wanted to add to that, in a couple of the communities I was in Mexico, there was that division also, and there were a couple of assassinations in one of the communities that I went to. But in the north, in Durango, in the Canadian mine that actually had to leave, what an organization in Mexico City did was help the community and the union workers who were miners come together and work towards a shared goal, and had success in two ways. In, like I say, the mine actually did have to leave, but the community was getting payback from things that the mine had agreed to do and had never done. And then the other piece is that the Canada Pension Fund pulled their money out of that particular mine. So that was like 3 million shares in Exelon. So the movie in many ways wasn't really uplifting, but there is, you know, change happening. It's just coming slowly, and so many people are suffering who already have so little.
I know we had a Susan. I saw your hand up. Did you want to ask a question? Could you, Susan Gage over there? I know she had a question. I'll put my hand up a few times.
I believe there's a legal movement to try, and I don't know where it's at, and that's my question, so that people from a country like Guatemala can come to Canada and pursue a company like Goldcorp under legal process. And I'm just wondering where that's at.
You might be referring to two things. And first of all, as the Mining Justice Action Committee, we are supporting the passage of Bill C-323, which is a private member's bill promoted by NDP member Peter Julian, which would bring that opportunity for Canadian mining companies to bring their cases into Canadian courts. It has a really slim to none chance of passing in this present sitting, but it is a way of educating and discussion and getting the word out that this is a great need. The other one you may be referring to, I'm not sure, is the Hudbay Minerals case that is actually being championed by the Klippensteins in Toronto, and it's going to a Canadian court. It's probably going to take a couple of years. This is really precedent setting. It's never happened before. And so we're really eager to perhaps connect with them, work with them, support them to see what happens with that case. And I think that when Graham Russell is here, he would be able to talk a lot about the Hudbay Minerals case as well, because he's very involved in that. So that legal challenge is a one of a kind, the first of its kind, but we need something a lot more in depth. We need regulation, and this self-regulation is just not working. Other questions? I think we have one right up at the front, and probably this will be the last.
I just wanted to get that stat again about the proportion of ore to refined gold at the mine site.
I can say something in general. It takes about 20 to 30 tons of overburden in ore to make one gold wedding band.
Okay, we're going to sort of start wrapping this up because we've got another showing at 9:15, but Mark just wants to make a quick announcement.
Directly related. There's a few questions that came up around how to hold institutions accountable, and I think this is something we've been talking about here on campus for the last several months, especially after the announcement that UVic had accepted money from Goldcorp. And I think one thing is to hold the university to the words it says it's committed to, like around free, informed, prior consent, around sustainability and these kinds of things. And I think as a community, unions, students, can work together in demanding that UVic actually speak and advocate for these things, commit to free, informed, and prior consent, press it on all the partners that's involved with, and I think this is something that can be demanded very quickly. On Friday at 12:30 here on campus, there's going to be a march that's hoping to bring out faculty, students, and staff to make those types of claims together. And I think that's one way to lobby and to create a fairly unified voice in an institution that's rapidly leaving its roots in the people who actually work here and is becoming an administrative sort of setup that's basically based on corporate transactions and these kinds of things. So that's one space of democratization and politicization that I think is an important one. So remember that, 12:30 Friday.
11:45 a.m.
Okay, 11:45 a.m. It'll be in front of the Cornett building. Is that correct? David Strong building. In front of the business building, which accepted the corporate donation. So a spot for the conversation to happen.
We're going to wrap it up now, but before we do, we really do need to wrap it up because we've got another film showing. So before we do, I would just really invite you on your way out to sign up to receive information from either the Mining Justice Action Committee, specifically on mining issues, or Central American Sport Committee. And we also have a petition to support the Bill C-323 initiative that we discussed earlier that would bring regulation to Canadian mining companies.
One more thing, Heather. I'm going to be outside with a popcorn bag to collect money for the folks in the village.
And if you didn't notice the photo exhibit as you came in, that's an Amnesty International photo exhibit on Canadian mining in predominantly Latin America. Take a few minutes to look at it. It has Theodora in it, and it gives you a good sense of what's happening.
Thank you for coming.